Welcome to Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran. Sharon has a passion for Scripture that will motivate and challenge you to immerse yourself in God's Word and apply His message to your everyday life. Visit SeekingTruth.net to learn more about bringing Seeking Truth to your parish or to become an online learner. Today, it's part 2 of the second book of Samuel, chapters 12 through 19. And now, Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran.
So we see a mirror image, David's household. They are mirroring exactly what their father did. First, it's going to be uncovering nakedness and illicit sexual union, followed by murder, exactly what their father had done. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded, and the king's sons arose and mounted their mules and fled. While they were on their way, tidings came to David. Absalom has slain all the king's sons. Not one of them is left. The king arose. He rent his garments. He lay on the earth. His servants were called. He's standing there renting his garments, just beside himself. And Jonadab, that crafty cousin who encouraged Amnon to rape Tamar, that very crafty guy, said, "Let not my lord suppose that they have killed all the young men of the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead. For it's by the command of Absalom. This has been determined from the day he forced his sister Tamar," which, by the way, Jonadab encouraged him to do, remember? "Now, therefore, let not my lord the king take heart to suppose that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon alone is dead." So paint the worst case scenario and then rush in and save the day. Absalom fled. Jonadab said to the king, "Behold, the king's sons have come, as your servant me have said, and only one is dead. All the rest are fine." The king was relieved, but he and all his servants wept bitterly. Absalom flees. And where does Absalom go? To the king of Geshur. Why? Because that's his maternal grandpa. His mother's father is the king of Geshur. Now, where is Geshur? Way, 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 way up north beyond the Sea of Galilee. And Jerusalem is way, 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 way south. And Jerusalem is the largest city. The city sit on a hill, the city where the Ark of the Covenant is now is. And Geshur is podunk nothing. So he is going to take cover. Now he'll be a prince up there, because his grandfather is the king of Geshur. So he will be Prince Absalom, and he will have a comfortable palace to live in with Grandpa Geshur. And David is mourning for his son day after day after day. Absalom has gone to Geshur, and he has been there for 3 full years. Remember, with Amnon dead, Absalom is next in line to take the throne when David dies. Now, the spirit of King David longed to go forth to Absalom. He was comforted about Amnon seeing that he was dead. Absalom had done his father's disciplining for him, but in a sinful way through murder. So Joab now, the son of Zeruiah, that's David's sister. This is David's nephew. He's the commander of his army, if you remember. He perceives that the king's heart had gone out to his son Absalom. And Joab sends a woman from Tekoa. She's a very wise woman. And he tells her, "Pretend that you're a mourner and put on mourning garments and anoint yourself with oil and behave like a woman who has been mourning for many, many days for the dead, and go to King David and speak this to him." So Joab put all the words in her mouth that he wanted to relay to King David. This is very reminiscent of God put all the words into Nathan's mouth that he wanted to relay to David through a story, through a parable. Remember? Now this woman's going to do it. The woman at Tekoa came to the king. She fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance. "Help, O king." And the king said to her, "What is it? What is your trouble?" And she said, "Alas, I am a widow. My husband is dead. Your handmaid had 2 sons. They quarreled with one another in the field, and there was no one to part them, and one struck the other and killed him." Does that sound like any Bible story you've ever heard before? 2 boys out in a field and one brother kills the other brother and innocent blood is on the ground? Yeah. 2 sons quarreling in a field, one strikes the other and kills him, and innocent blood is crying out from the cursed earth. Sounds a lot like Cain and Abel. And remember how God the Father disciplined Cain? Since he killed his brother and it was innocent blood, did God strike Cain dead? No, he exiled him far, far away to the east. And God did something else. He put a mark on Cain's head, remember? And was that mark a good mark or a bad mark? God said, "This mark will protect you. It's a good mark. It will protect him." So he's marked and exiled. Just like Absalom, he's not stoned to death for the murder. of his brother Amnon. He should have been. He had servants do his dirty work. It wasn't his own hands that did the murder. He might have claimed that. But he was banished. He was exiled away from the father to the kingdom of Geshur with his maternal grandfather. And he's still marked as the king of Israel's son. And next in line, the heir to the throne. And this kid's pretty hot on himself. Absalom wants to be the king, not of Geshur, not of Podunk Grandpa's little dinky kingdom way up north, but his deepest identity is as a son of the king of Israel, who he succeeds. He is next in line to that royal throne, and he can taste it. And he doesn't want dinky little kingdom of Geshur way up north. He wants whole honkin' Israel. So back to this wise woman. She tells the story of her son's dying. And now the whole family has risen against your handmaid. And they say, give up the man who struck his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew. And so they would destroy the heir also. Thus they would quench my coal which is left, and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant upon the face of the earth. She pleads her case. She tells this story, and it is like that parable of Nathan. It starts to pierce David's heart. Go to your house. I will give orders concerning you. And she says, on me be the guilt, my lord king, of on my father's house. Let the king on his throne be guiltless. If anyone says anything to you, bring him to me, said David, and he will never touch you again. And she said, pray let the king invoke the Lord your God, that the avenger of blood slay no more, and that my son not be destroyed, not one hair on his head. That rings true to Absalom. Don't destroy Absalom, not one hair on his big head of hair. The woman said, pray, let your handmaid speak a word to the Lord, my king. Speak, the king said. And the woman said, why have you planned such a thing against the people of God? For in giving the decision, the king convicts himself, inasmuch as the king does not bring his banished one home again. We must all die. We are like water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. But God will not take away the life of him who devises means not to keep his banished one an outcast. She's pleading for the king to bring Absalom home in disguise by telling this story. Now I have come to say this to my lord the king because the people have made me afraid, and your handmaid thought I will speak to the king. It might be that the king will perform the request of his servant, that the king will hear. And she continues to say, your discernment is so great. You're like an angel of God. I know you'll do the right thing. And the king asked the woman, do not hide anything from me that I ask of you. And the woman said, let my lord the king speak. And the king asked, was it the hand of Joab that put you up to this? And she said, yes, as surely as you live, my lord and king, one cannot turn to the right or to the left from anything that the Lord the king has said. Your servant Joab did bade me to say these words. So Joab also wants Absalom back home. Behold, I grant this. Bring the young man Absalom back home. Now Joab knows that Absalom is the heir to the throne. David's getting older. Joab might work for Absalom someday, or else he'll get the axe. With Absalom in exile and estranged from the royal family, Israel's government becomes unstable with an aging king on the throne. And Joab may also want to keep an eye on Absalom, bring him closer to home and keep an eye on him. Those are some possibilities the author leaves us with. So Joab arose, he went to Geshur, he brought Absalom back to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him dwell apart in his own house. He is not to come into my presence. So even though he's not in exile anymore, King David will not see his son that murdered the other son. Now, in all of Israel, there was no one so much to be praised for his beauty as Absalom. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was absolutely no blemish in him. He was the most beautiful man they had ever laid eyes on. And when he cut the hair of his head for the end of every year, he used to cut it because it would get so heavy on him, so he'd have to cut it. He weighed his hair, the hair on his head, 200 shekels by the king's weight. Raise your hand if when you go to the hair salon or the barber, you have them weigh your hair. He's a narcissist. He loves his hair. How many of you weigh your hair? Nobody. Who else in the Bible had absolutely amazing hair? Who? Yes, Samson. It was the fall of him as well. He loved his hair. Absalom would have heard about the judge Samson from the tribe of Dan, lived right before his time, in the time of the judges, Judges 15. We're also told that Absalom has three sons and one daughter. He named his daughter Tamar after his sister who was raped, but she'll never have any children. And this little girl, Tamar, was gorgeous. She was a beautiful woman. Obviously, this royal family, royalty on both sides, mother and father, have good looks. They are a good-looking family. They come from a royal line from the king of Geshur on the mother's side. She was a princess, the father's King David, and these kids are lookers, Absalom, Tamar, and Tamar's whole family. Do good looks matter to God? Do good looks matter to God? When they were choosing Saul, they chose him because he was so good-looking. Remember? And the Lord said through Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height. I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at things like that. People look at outward appearance, but the Lord God looks upon the heart. And even Jesus, when he came, we don't hear anything about his good looks in the scriptures, do we? In fact, Isaiah in the suffering servant, Isaiah 53 says he had no form or comeliness that we should look at him. He had no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by many. Absalom was gorgeous. Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem without coming into the king's presence. Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but Joab wouldn't come. He sent a second time for Joab, but Joab wouldn't come. This prince, this narcissistic prince, had great ambition and no one is listening to him, and he's getting so frustrated sitting in this house all alone for 5 years. Then he says to his servant, see, Joab's field is next to me. He has barley there. Go set it on fire. And Absalom's servants went and set the field on fire. Does that sound like anyone we know? Remember in Judges 15 when Samson set the foxes' tails on fire and sent them through the Philistines' fields and burned up the fields? Very similar. Absalom's servant set Joab's fields on fire. Boy, that sure got his attention. He got there in a hurry. Joab arose and went to Absalom at his house and said to him, why have your servants set my field on fire? And Absalom answered Joab, behold, I sent word to you. Come here that I may send you to the king to ask, why have I come from Geshur? I mean, it would have been better for me to still be there. So go tell the king I want to come into his presence. And if there's guilt in him, let him kill me. For Absalom, it would be better to die than just be a nobody in this little house on the side. Joab went to the king. He told the king and he summoned Absalom. So he came to the king. He bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. That's all we hear. No words are spoken, no words are exchanged, but the king kisses Absalom. Now, after that, right after that, Absalom got himself a chariot, he got himself horses, he got himself 50 men to run before him, and he'd get up real early in the morning and he'd go out to the gate of Jerusalem and he would talk to people and he'd say, oh, wow, I'm really sorry the king's not available today, but could I hear your case? Oh, wow, if I were the king, I would judge in your favor. Oh, wow, you have a really good case. I would give you so much justice. If I were the judge, every man that had a suit could come to me and I would give him justice. And whenever a man came near to do him obeisance, he would not just put out his hand, but he would take a hold of him and he'd kiss him. And Absalom, this good-looking guy, ingratiated many, many, many people towards himself. He was getting very, very, very popular with the populace of Israel. In other words, Absalom was an extremely talented politician. And he was tactically ingratiating people to himself. He did this for 4 solid years, so he had quite a following of fans by this time. At the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, pray let me go and pay my vow, which I vowed to the Lord in Hebron. Your servant vowed a vow when I dwelt in Geshur in Aram, saying that if the Lord will indeed bring me back to the Jerusalem, then I would offer worship to the Lord. So the king says, okay, yeah, okay, go in peace, you can go. So he lets him go to Hebron. Now, Hebron, this is where the patriarchs are buried. This is the second most important city next to Jerusalem. Why? This is where David was made a king. He was made king of Judah in Hebron. He was made king of Israel in Hebron. What is Absalom doing? Absalom sent secret messengers throughout the tribes of Israel, all the tribes, saying that as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then say, Absalom is king in Hebron. And Absalom sent 200 men from Jerusalem who were his invited guests. They went in simplicity. They knew nothing. They were naive to his plan. And he was offering sacrifices. He sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite. This guy, Ahithophel, is going to be very important in the story because he is David's counselor. He is David's senior advisor for years. He has been David's senior advisor. And the conspiracy grew strong and the people with Absalom kept increasing and increasing and increasing. The messenger came to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom. So David knows a coup has been staged. This is a mutiny. His son has claimed to be the king. He's taking over David's throne. And David knows he must flee. He must flee Jerusalem. There would be no escaping from Absalom. We must go in haste. He could take us over very quickly. He could bring evil down upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. Because remember what Nathan's curse was from the Lord? That the sword is never going to leave the house of David, and his son is going to smite the city with the edge of his sword. David knows this prophecy is coming true. The sword will never depart from David's house. Violence was promised on his house. This was supposed to be the city of peace, Jerusalem, the city of Shalom, of peace. Absalom's name means father of peace, or my father is peace. The king's servant said to the king, "Behold, your servants are ready to do whatever the Lord decides." So the king went forth with his household after him, but the king left 10 concubines behind to keep the house. There was a little dusting to do, some laundry as well. The king went forth, all the people after him. They halted at the last house. With him, they passed by the Cherethites, the Pelethites, 600 Gittites that had followed David from Gath. So David has picked up people from all other countries, mercenaries, people that have come under David's leadership because they loved him as a king, foreigners, that he's some converts, they've converted to Judaism. And the king says to Atteah the Gittite, "Why do you go along with us? Go back, stay with your king. You're a foreigner. You're in exile from your own home. You just came yesterday. Why should you go with me?" But they love David. They love David. He has shown steadfast love and faithfulness, and they've fallen in love with David's God. And this is like another story we know. Atteah answered the king, "As the Lord lives and as the Lord, the king lives, wherever my Lord, the king will go, there I will go, there I will die. I will be your servant." Doesn't that sound like Naomi and Ruth? Wherever you go, I will go. They've converted. They've converted to David and they've converted to his God, and they're going to stay with him. All the country wept aloud as all the people passed by, and the king was leaving Jerusalem, and the king crossed the brook of Kidron, and all the people were with him, and they're heading towards the wilderness. David crossing the brook Kidron. This is such a reenactment of what Jesus is going to go through. It's such a foretelling of what Jesus will go through. In John 18, Jesus had spoken these words. He went forth with his disciples across this very location in the Kidron Valley. There was a garden, the Garden of Gethsemane, where his disciples entered. This is where David is right now. Instead of coming into Jerusalem, he's fleeing Jerusalem. And Abiathar came, and Zadok, they are the priests, the Levites that are bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. They set it down. All the people are passing by, and they want to go with David, but David says the Ark must stay in the city. The Ark must go back. The Ark of God belongs in Jerusalem. David had learned that lesson, and it was our reading at Mass today. We're reading right now in Mass 1 Samuel. What we just studied will be in Samuel till February. So today's reading was when the Israelites in fear took the Ark from Shiloh, where it was supposed to be parked with the priests, and they brought it into battle, and 30,000 Israelites, their own soldiers, were killed because they didn't leave the Ark of God where it was supposed to be. And they took it into war and were trying to use it as a weapon. And the Philistines, in fact, captured the Ark of God. So David had learned from that, the Ark stays. The Ark stays. I will trust the Lord. The Ark stays put with the priests. So Zadok and Abiathar carry the Ark of God back to Jerusalem, and it remains there. David is going up the ascent of the Mount of Olives, just where Jesus went. He's weeping just as Jesus wept over Jerusalem. He's barefoot. His head is covered. All the people covered their heads. They're weeping. And it was told to David that Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. That was an absolute sword in David's heart, because this was his number one senior advisor, and he's traded sides, treachery, betrayal. Ahithophel has gone with Absalom. It's such a sting. It's such a betrayal. It's such Judas in the same location. David is on his Via Dolorosa. It's just the opposite. He's going the other way out of Jerusalem, but it is his way of suffering. It's the same road Jesus took. Ahithophel had been his senior advisor. His counsel was wonderful. He was full of sage wisdom, and he loved the Lord. Why was he trading sides? Why was he turning to Absalom? David prayed, "Oh Lord God, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." And so there's a real typology between Ahithophel and the antitype Judas. And it's location, location, location. It's all happening in the very same place. It's at the ascent of the Mount of Olives, where Jesus was also arrested and betrayed. So David's Via Dolorosa, his way of suffering, he has to figure out who are his friends and who are his foes. And Jesus had to figure out the same thing. One man comes to him, Hushai. David says, you know, he wants to be a friend, but David says, you're going to be a burden to me right now, but I'll tell you how I could use you. Could you be a spy? Could you go in and be a spy? And he's happy to do it. I will be your servant. So he goes to Absalom and he says, "I'll be your servant, O king, as I have been your father's servant in the past." And he tricks him. And he uses words, he's never really lying, but of course, narcissistic Absalom thinks wants him to be the king, and that's not the case. He also gets the priests, Zadok and Abathar. He knows he can trust them. He knows they are on his side. So he gets each of them have a son, and he gets those two sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, to be spies for David. They will bring messages back and forth from the priests who are in Jerusalem. They'll bring them out to David. So Hushai, David's friend, comes into the city just as Absalom was entering Jerusalem. Another friend we know is Ziba. Ziba brings fresh supplies. He brings mules. He brings food, munitions for the men, lots of food. He is trying to ingratiate himself to David. He is Jonathan's lame son's servant, and he's left Mephibosheth behind, and he's come and ingratiate himself to David, hoping to get all that property back. It works, but it's not going to work in the end. He's a friend to David at the expense of Jonathan's lame son. We have another character, Shimei. I'm not going to get into these real deeply, but this guy is a Benjamite. He is from the family of Saul. He loved Saul, and he keeps cursing David because all the blood guilt that was brought to the Benjamites through David. And so he throws stones at David and taunts him and curses him and kicks dust at him. Some of David's men say, "We should kill him." And David said, no, let it come, let it come. Perhaps the Lord is using this to teach me something. Whatever God's will, let thy will be done. And just that same surrender that Jesus had in the Garden of Gethsemane, and people were jeering at him and spitting on him and throwing stones at him and kicking dust up at him. And "Thy will be done, Father, thy will be done." He takes all the insults and the curses and ushers in the greatest blessing. So in the end, Absalom must decide to take the counsel of David's secret spy, Hushai, or the advice of David's former senior advisor, Ahithophel, who has defected to Absalom's side. Ahithophel's advice to Absalom, this is what he told him to do: "Go to your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father, and the hands of all who are with you will be strengthened." So he suggests a power play. Now, why would he do this? He knows Nathan's prophecy. They pitched a tent for Absalom upon the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel. That is exactly what Nathan told David would be the consequence of his sin. That same roof where David had sinned with Bathsheba. Remember Nathan's prophecy to David after that? This is what the Lord says: "Out of your own household, I am going to bring calamity on you. Before your very eyes, I will take your wives, and I will give them to one who is close to you, and he will sleep with your wives in broad daylight." And that's happening now. That is the counsel of Ahithophel, and it is as one consulted by the oracle of God. He remembered that prophecy, and it was the counsel of Ahithophel that was so esteemed both by David and by Absalom. Ahithophel had been David's esteemed advisor. Then why did he change allegiance to Absalom? Why would he do that? And David writes in Psalm 41, "Even my bosom friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted his heel against me." And David wrote in Psalm 55, "It is not an enemy who taunts me, then I could bear it. It is not an adversary who deals insolently with me, then I could hide it from him. But it is you, my equal, my companion, my familiar friend. We used to hold sweet conversation together within God's house when we walked together in fellowship. It's his head senior advisor turning on him. Ahithophel is David's Judas. Why? Ahithophel says, let me get 12,000 men. I'm going to set out. I'm going to pursue David tonight. I'll come upon him when he's weary, when he's discouraged. I'll throw him into a panic. All the people will flee. I'll strike down only the king. I will only kill King David. I'll bring all the people back to you as a bride who comes home to her husband. Remember that line, as a bride who comes home to her husband. Because as it turns out, this guy is Bathsheba's grandfather, and she didn't get to come home to her husband. Because David killed her husband. And this senior advisor has been holding a grudge for a number of years and waiting for the opportune moment to take revenge on David. The other guy, Hushaya, has different advice. He says, no. The advice Ahithophel gave, that's not good. I got a different idea. See, Ahithophel just wants to kill David and then save all the people. But this guy says he's trying to buy time for David. And he says that David, he feels like a mother bear being robbed of her cubs in the field. David, your father, he's an expert in war. He's not going to spend the night with the people. You know that. He's a better strategist than that. Your father's a mighty man. And those who are with him are valiant warriors. My counsel is that all Israel be gathered to you, Absalom, from Dan to Beersheba, and that from the sand of the sea, a multitude that will go, that you go into battle in person. And so he's buying time. He wants a battle. And Absalom, who's a narcissist, takes the counsel of Hushai the Archite better than the counsel of Ahithophel. He goes with David's spy and follows his counsel. So the boys, the priest boys, go back and tell David what's going on. They're the spies. They take word. Don't lodge tonight at the fords in the wilderness. Don't go there. They're coming for you. They're coming for you. When his counsel wasn't taken, Ahithophel, the senior advisor, the traitor, the Judas, when his counsel wasn't followed, he saddled his ass. He went home to his own city. He set his house in order and he hanged himself. And he died and was buried in the tomb of his father. This is the only premeditated suicide in the Old Testament. The others were all in desperation in combat situations, like when Saul speared himself because soldiers are coming at him to cut his head off. This guy pre-planned, premeditated this. They did not take his counsel. He doesn't want to be strung up like Saul was. He wants to plan his death. He wants to be buried in the city where his father's tomb is. And he will do a premeditated suicide. And church fathers, it's by hanging, just as Judas hung himself in a premeditated way. So this is very, very similar. Treachery to David, treachery to a son of David. A nighttime ambush of David, a nighttime betrayal of Jesus in the garden. Wants to die in his home city and wants to be buried with his fathers. Why would Ahithophel betray David? Because Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, we're told at the end of 2 Samuel that Eliam is the son of Ahithophel, meaning Bathsheba was his granddaughter.
That was part 2 of the second book of Samuel, chapters 12 through 19, on Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran. To learn more about Seeking Truth Bible studies, visit seekingtruth.net. Tune in next time for more Seeking Truth with Sharon Doran.